Thank you once again for tuning into the Psychedelic Podcast. I'm your host, Tina Marie, here with all the men of the group, Nico, Rob, and Chris. This is ironic for reasons some of you might know, since we are discussing true crime. I believe a lot of people are drawn to true crime for many reasons, the top one being curiosity. But before we get into the discussion, I have a little pop quiz for you guys. Which serial killer enjoyed dressing up as a clown and working charity events, Nico?
John Wayne Gacy.
I didn't even have to give you multiple choice answers for that. You got it right. It is John Wayne Gacy. Bonus question, what was his clown name?
It was either Pogo or Demon Pogo. I'm inclined to believe it was Demon Pogo.
That is correct. It was Pogo the Clown. Demon Pogo sounds pretty cool too. And why do you think I gave you that question? It's an inside joke, guys.
Back at the Psychopaths episode, I was very excited about it because I have 2 degrees of separation from a very well-known serial murderer. And I thought it was John Wayne Gacy because he got tried out in Cook County. But it was actually the Milwaukee cannibal, Jeffrey Dahmer, that I have 2 degrees of separation from.
Jeffrey Dahmer. Wow.
We got an expert over here.
That's Chris.
Well, Chris.
All right. Yeah. This question is for Rob. The St. Valentine's Day Massacre is associated with which famous criminal, Rob? Was it George Moran, John Dillinger, or Al Capone?
I was going to say Johnny D, but I'm going to say Al Capone for the Italian heritage.
Okay, I need to work better on the questions and why I give them to you guys.
You said there was a reason for it.
That's true. That's fair. Bonus question, and I'll give this one to Chris. How many people did his men kill that day?
Too many, but I don't know.
It was 8.
Do you know how they caught Al Capone?
No.
On the toilet like Elvis?
No, tax breaks.
That's not very gangster of him.
I just think put a piece gangster. Of cheese underneath a box, and then he's just all like, hey, cheese, and then he got caught.
Oh, wait, a mousetrap? Yeah, I mean, that's a likely prediction.
A likely story.
Yeah.
All right, which man in this lineup was known as the most prolific serial killer in the United States history? Chris, was it Gary Ridgway, Jeffrey Dahmer, or Paul Knowles?
I think you might have found one that stumped me.
Yes, that was the point.
It's very obscure.
I'm going to say Ridgway. It's probably not right, though.
Who did you just say?
Gary Ridgway?
You got it. And what was his pseudonym?
JW.
He was the Green River Killer, and he netted 49 victims.
JW? What is that?
In Chicago, criminal H.H. Holmes had a house in Chicago that eventually bore which nickname, Nico? That was a tongue twister. Was it A, the Dungeon, B, Murder Castle, or C, Fraudville?
Murder Castle sounds right, but was that the one where he had people come to his hotel and then he would murder people in his hotel? Is that Holmes?
It was Murder Castle. I don't really know the answer behind that question. And you live in Illinois, so I thought that was a fitting question for you.
I want to answer that question.
Yes. Do
it. It was during the World's Fair that he had his hotel built. He actually owned the pharmacy across the street from it that he swindled out of the owner. Then he built another pharmacy inside his hotel. But yes, he attracted customers, and not just customers, but he also killed his girlfriend and her sister in his vault. But yes, he would hire construction crews, fire them, hire new ones, fire them. He built just a super murder hotel.
Was it a real castle?
No, it was just a hotel. They just called it the Murder Castle.
How did the Angel of Death kill most of his elderly patients, Rob? Did he drug them, smother them, or drain them of blood?
I would say he drained them of their blood.
He's not a vampire.
Wasn't the Angel of Death self-assisted suicide? Wasn't that the drug dude?
You got it.
You know Sad. Too much.
Which serial killer claimed that a demonic dog commanded him to commit murder, Chris? Was it A, Dennis Rader, B, David Berkowitz, or C, Bobby Joe Long?
I only know him as a son of Sam, but yeah.
So David Berkowitz.
That sounds about right.
Isn't that the son of Sam?
I should know who the son of Sam is. I guess it's David Berkowitz.
I think he's DB.
Good old DB. All right. Giving your own definition, Nico, we'll start with you. What is true crime to you?
I like to assess this as an English dude. You know, got my degree in English. So I'm going to take this from the novelistic approach and say true crime is a part of the mystery genre. R.J. Jacobs wrote psychological thrillers. They're in the same category as in the mystery. So I think true crime is definitely in the category of English.
A lot of true crime novels are written and a lot of people read them. How about you, Rob? What do you think true crime is, giving your own definition?
As opposed to false crime? I don't know. I'm not really that big into it. I mean, I've dabbled here and there. We went on a forensic file freaking marathon a couple times. But true crime is homicides, not suicides.
It could be related to true crime.
Murders and serial killers that you have to piece together. Like a guess who, find out who did what, a whodunit.
Whodunit.
In an elaborate storytelling way.
Oddly enough, when we went on that Forensic Files binge, and this is going to come into play later of why I think a lot of women watch and listen and read about true crime, the Forensic Files binge happened when I was pregnant. Chris, what is your definition of true crime? Being a true crime fan, give us your definition.
To me, it's just an interest in the macabre and learning and trying to figure out things. I think it's a lot of ways trying to learn from it, not to commit acts, but keep them from happening.
When I went onto the PodVCon convention, talked with a panel of women, one of the questions that somebody asked was, who do you think is most interested in true crime? And my response was pretty much on par with what yours was. Women want to make sure that these types of things don't happen to them. And so they go and they watch these shows, and subconsciously they're getting information and learning how to avoid being victims. Females have more of a propensity than males to listen to true crime shows or read the books. Nico, what do you think is the reason behind that?
I want to point out that in the literary world, the mystery genre is definitely the most popular genre in America. That includes the true crime. Like, true crime is pretty much real historical events meeting detective fiction. Most readership in that genre is going to be females. I find that intriguing, but there is the concept that females care more about people and men care more about things, since mystery is all about solving the crime of a person who's received the worst treatment a person can receive on the planet. That's something that's attractive to that general population, I would assume.
I think that's an interesting theory, because since you just mentioned that women are more empathetic, wouldn't you think that they wouldn't want to read stuff like this because you're seeing somebody get hurt? I find that really interesting that females are more interested in this than males, because I wonder if the males that watch it are studying on for the same reasons, like the interest in the macabre for one and the curiosity aspect of it and everything, but maybe also to make sure that things like that don't happen to their loved ones. What do you think, Chris?
I could give you my opinion, then I can also provide you a social psychologist and professor at IWU.
I'd like both.
All right. I guess I'll provide her opinion first, and then I will state mine. Amanda Vaccari, she's a social psychologist and professor. Yes.
Damn shelves.
At IWU, she studies social psychology behind crimes and media uses of that. She determined that women listen to it more, and men actually, in contrast, study more about war. And women tend to fear more than men, even subconsciously. It could be leading them to learn more about true crimes and ways to learn to prevent it from happening, or perhaps even pick up on cues of maybe somebody that they're with that could potentially commit a crime against them.
Rob, what about you?
They find comfort seeking in facing one of their biggest fears head on, which I think for a lot of women is falling victim to a gruesome and horrific crime. When it comes to them fearing this so much, it's a tool to better understand the moral limits of people in our society. They look for a way to kind of satiate this fear, I guess, by going to these stories as a way to experience it, so that maybe in a way they can move past it and kind of put that fear behind them. But at the same time, it's addicting and they always go back to it. So I feel like the fear is perpetuated by the true crime.
Yeah.
And it keeps women driving back towards it. And it's kind of like a vicious cycle. It can kind of be an addiction of watching the train wreck constantly. They have compassion for the victims, like we talked about in the male and the female brain episode last season. women have more empathy naturally, so they can become more emotionally connected to these victims. They're fascinated with the motives.
Yeah.
They're more imaginative. So they want to try to puzzle things together and untangle things, especially...
My necklaces?
Yeah, like necklaces. Things that you have to think a lot more deeply for, like unsolved murders, cold cases, I guess.
Yeah.
The element of escapism, too. It's something for them to enjoy from a distance that's really compelling storytelling-wise. And it's awful, but it's exciting. I guess that could be said for both genders.
I was just about to say, I think a lot of men do the escape aspect of it as well. Not just with true crime, but in many facets of life.
During what I mentioned about the researcher, she claimed that men have a stronger interest in war as opposed to women in true crime. Do y'all think it might be the fact that we all want to see, I hate to say it, but we all want to see a dead body. We all look at a car wreck to see if someone's hurt. We all look at a train wreck to see who's dead. Do you think that might have something to do with what it is that deep down we want to see a dead body? I hate to be that
like a way to desensitize ourselves from that macabre aspect of life.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I totally see where you're coming from with that because we all do that. When you turn your head when you're driving past a car wreck, you look. Yeah, like most people look.
Rubbernecking.
Rubbernecking. When I see a dead animal coming up, I look away. I can't. But when it comes to a car wreck, I look to make sure that people are okay. Or if I have to call the police, then I can do that for them if there's not already cops there. But even if there are cops there, I tend to look way more than I'll look at an animal.
What I find interesting is, yes, females may be the readership of the genre, but who is the authorship of the genre? Is it more male or female?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't actually know. Chris, do you know the answer to that?
I don't.
Maybe this is my ethnocentric man brain, but I think men are more the ones writing in the genre. I'm not saying reading, but writing in the genre. True. But it could be the patriarchy of our American system. I say that both sarcastically and sincerely. You know, there's a sense of writing is a male-dominated profession.
I'll go against that and say that I feel like a lot more true crime authors coming out now happen to be female, especially the ones that I've noticed in a lot of our podcast groups. The ones that are writing true crime, there's a lot of females. And it's not just mystery novels. I've noticed a lot more female authors lately in the true crime genre.
Might be equal.
We're coming to that point where everything's pretty much equal these days, right? Let's talk about some facts and statistics regarding true crime. Does anybody have any interesting information on that?
I do have some fun facts, quote fun facts, if you will.
Yeah, let's get into it.
All right. Crime rates rise depending on the temperature.
I have a theory for that.
So is that why the Middle East is so full of crime? Or is that a false correlation? I wonder if there's a correlation or causation, like at a specific peak, right? I don't think if it's 125, there's going to be more crime than there is at 99 degrees. You feel me?
Yeah, and that has something to do with what my theory was, actually. Like, propensity to commit homicide during warm weather, in my opinion, might have something to do with, especially in hot places. There's a lot of homeless people that go without hydration, and everyone gets angry. Non-homeless people get angry when they're really hot, especially me, and I'll admit that. I get super mad when I'm hot. But imagine you're in the Sahara Desert, and you're really hot, you don't have water.
Sorry.
And it can cause you to become delusional. You see mirages. And in my mind, I'm thinking there's a connection with a lot of cold cases in hot months, maybe partially because of the homeless community. And that's just a theory because unfortunately, there are a lot of drug addicts that become homeless or homeless people that become drug addicts or alcoholics to escape that feeling of being homeless. And a lot of people, when they're in desperate times, maybe they're seeking out drugs or something, they'll commit crimes and they can get away with it because essentially they're transient. They're very difficult to track.
Speaking as a person who used to work in the prison system, a lot of inmates, a few that I did talk to, they were repeat offenders because besides being institutionalized, it's also cold outside and some of them are homeless. So 3 square meals a day, a bed and someplace warmer than outside is like a hotel compared to sleeping on a bench.
I agree with that as well. I've known people that were homeless that would purposely commit petty crimes, especially during the colder, hot months of the year. even the drug addicts, they would go and be able to have a place to sleep with food and everything.
What do we do when the weather's warm? We head outside to enjoy the day. There's more people out and about, riding bikes, going for runs, walking the dog. There's outdoor music festivals, parades, crowded concerts. There's also a lot more opportunities to be around people under the influence of something. Spring, summer, whatever. If the weather's hot, there's going to be more people doing stuff. Crime in Chicago is really high, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know that. It's the third largest city in America. I was looking at crime statistics in Chicago, and I was reading this line chart that was graphing assault and battery crimes. It had some places in the cold periods where it peaked really high. But I did notice a steady incline in the crimes as the temperature did climb. But eventually, in peaks of the summer, when it got too hot and no one wanted to be outside anymore, the numbers dip at almost a 45-degree angle when it hits 85 degrees and above. Then for some reason, when it hit 100, the line graph shot way back up. So I think it's kind of random a little bit. I mean, there's a correlation between homicides and ice cream truck sales.
That's random.
According to an article I read that was written in New Orleans, there is such a thing as statistical coincidences, in my opinion.
Speaking of assault and battery, real crime junkies like you, Chris, would really love listening to this amazing podcast I just found. He basically invented the genre of true crime in the podcast world and combines 911 calls and interrogation calls, which is super interesting to me. You don't hear many quality shows like this, especially in such a saturated category, but Mike Boudet is definitely an expert narrator. So check out Sword and Scale. There's always fresh content bi-weekly on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, and every other platform. It's definitely something to subscribe to if you're a real true crime junkie. Check out swordandscale.com and don't be afraid to leave a review because the real monsters are walking amongst us already. Chris, what's your next fact?
In some states, it's still legal to hang people.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Is Louisiana one of them?
Not that I'm aware of.
How many are there?
During my research, I only found 3. Washington, New Hampshire, and Delaware.
Oh, northern states.
Well, that's interesting.
They don't do that often, I assume. Like, what are some famous ones where it was really over-the-top crimes where they got hung for that?
I'm not sure. I imagine they might be able to request it, too. But I think it's on par with something like lethal injection.
Or the chair.
Yeah, or the chair.
Right.
This isn't the Dark Ages. We have had better ways to hang people, too. We found ways to make sure the necks snap when they fall through, instead of how that used to be where they would just choke to death for 30 minutes.
Did you guys know that, what's her name, Bloody Mary? When she used to murder people, she would do the guillotine. And it's not what you think. It's not just one clean chop off of the head. They have to sit there, let it fall, and then they have to keep raising it like a dozen times for it to completely sever.
Saw it off then. I have a question for you guys. When it comes to lethal injections and murdering people that have committed really horrible crimes, are you for or against killing them?
Huh. Interesting question.
Killing them is the easy way out.
It is, because, I mean, first off, the Code of Hammurabi, we haven't really gone by that in centuries. I don't see why we should continue it. Like, let them stay in there and suffer. But at the same time, I do know we pay a lot of money to let them stay in there and suffer. It's kind of hard to figure out which way to lean.
And yeah, not just that, but the families that are suffering from losing loved ones, if that's what they want, it's such a hard thing to do because it's like you're playing God when you're killing a murderer, but you also want to get rid of them. You want to rid them of the world, but you also want them to suffer. There's so many different feelings and vibes that go into answering this type of question.
I think if the family really wants them dead, then that it should be up to them.
The same treatment that we do to our murderers, we should do to pedophiles. Because if we want to get rid of that kind of meme that's been instilled in our civilization, then we need to do more than just... We need to kill them. We can't just allow them to sit in jail and continually live and continue their genealogy. We need to cut that at the roots. You have pedophilia, fix it or die. You are a murderer, fix it or die. I think that's a very critical approach.
So would you be in support of the sterilization that some countries are doing to their pedophiles and sexual offenders?
I'm in support for that.
That's a more ethical way to approach it, but I'd have to chew on that for a few days.
a quick gene pool adjustment, you know, get it out of the way.
It would take generations, multiple generations to remove. If you are a pedophile or a murderer, you're removed from the gene pool. Having sex with a 12-year-old girl was not looked down upon 3,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, shoot, even 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, look at Poe.
Speaking of Poe, the wedding with his 12-year-old cousin, there's debate of whether or not that marriage ever got consummated or not.
For all the listeners listening, that's the fourth Poe reference in our history.
Well, we're talking about true crime.
We keep track.
Should we start a drinking game on that, you think?
It can be. It's going to turn into that one day.
Okay, Chris, what's your next fact?
Males with less than common names tend to commit more crimes.
Nico, what do you think about that?
It's funny because you call me Nico, right? How common is that name?
That's why I called you out.
Not very
common.
Because
your real name is Nicholas.
I can go on a spiel, a whole spiel on how I think names define people. I have an idea that the name that you have impacts you. I can see how somebody with a unique name would be inclined to break the rules of society and test the rules of society because they're testing the rules with their name. They would test the rules with society.
I've had several friends named Raven, and they've all been hipsters.
Would you consider John Wayne Gacy? Because his dad named him after the movie star to toughen him up. He didn't just name him John Wayne because he liked those two names. He liked it because of the movie star and wanted his son to be tough like that. Would you consider that odd because of the way he was named?
I do consider that odd. It's not an odd name per se, like you guys were talking about, but I think that, yes, that actually makes complete sense.
Yeah, maybe he wanted to live up to his movie star name given potential.
Yeah, like I'm not good as John Wayne and my dad named me after John Wayne so I could be a tough guy, but I'm not really all that tough. I'm a clown.
At least I'll be known for some.
Yeah.
His dad was a jerk. He did that to toughen him up, but he was a jerk.
Who else can we think of from true crime with interesting or different or unique names?
Eileen Wuornos.
Eileen isn't a strange name.
It's a unique name. I mean, to me, I only know one Eileen that's not that song.
Hold on. We're not calling anybody out on your names if your name happens to be one of these names. We're just assessing the name.
I forgot about that factor.
Yeah, we got
all the Eileens out there.
To all the Eileens out there, you're probably an amazing person and not a murderer or a psychopath.
And Ravens, I mean, you guys are not all hipsters. Maybe a bunch of you.
Yeah, there's some wholesome Ravens out there.
There are some wholesome Ravens.
Think about the one from Teen Titans. That one wasn't too bad.
I love her.
How do you know what she did?
I don't. That's the problem. I don't know what they did off air.
Okay. Let's move on to some more facts and statistics.
Yeah, all right. So my last fun fact, if you want to call it that, I'm going to turn into a question for all of y'all. What is the most stolen vehicle?
Mercedes.
A Honda.
A Honda.
A Humvee.
A Honda Civic? There's no way.
I would say Honda Civic.
Why the heck would you want to steal a Honda Civic?
Gas mileage.
Give me a sec. Like, it's what I have in my head is the old sports cruisers. It's what the Blues Brothers drove.
I would think it would be a push-to-start kind of car.
A Chevy Bel Air.
Are y'all ready for the answer?
Yeah, I'm scared.
The answer is a Honda Accord.
What?
Oh,
I was way off. You almost had it.
When you started guessing Honda, I was like, oh, dang, I started sweating over here. Y'all might get it on the first go-around.
Well, what is the number one most common hood ornament stolen from a car?
Jaguar.
Mercedes. Horse.
Beamer.
Yeah.
No, it's the Mercedes. I noticed that a lot.
Oh, wait. BMWs don't have the hood ornament. It's just...
It's Mercedes. That's why I guessed Mercedes. Because I noticed that a lot of people do that and they'll stick it on their little stupid Honda. I'm sorry, Honda people.
That little stupid Honda Accord, that's why you get stolen.
Oh, poor Honda people.
Why are they the most stolen?
Fuel efficiency, I don't know. When I was doing my research, they just said that's the most stolen vehicle. They didn't give me a reason.
They don't seem like fast getaway cars to me.
Well, aren't they common?
Inconspicuous.
Exactly. Turn right on a main road, how many Honda Accords are you going to run into?
If Jeffrey Dahmer pops out of a Honda Accord or something, I'd be like, huh, he looks like a normal fella. I wonder what he's up to today.
Do you think that since they do make such a large quantity of them that they can steal, that they can steal them sell them for parts, since maybe the different models have the same parts throughout the years.
That's actually really common to steal cars to take to the chop shop, and they usually do have common cars, like he was saying, like Hondas and Toyotas and trucks. They like truck parts because the engines are really good for chop shops.
Being a professional car thief, isn't that the reason why they do that? I don't know.
Next!
I was trying to bounce some ideas off you guys.
It's hard to see. I mean, it's hard to know who's going to talk because we can't see each other. But Chris, what's your next fact?
That was actually my last fun fact, but I do have a very interesting true crime story if y'all want to hear it.
Sure.
Of course.
All right. I don't know how to pronounce this name, and I'm going to need someone to correct me. It looks like Hinterkaifeck.
Holy F-bomb.
Hinterkaifeck.
Good lord.
That's the name.
Hinterkaifeck. Hinterkaifeck.
I'm calling them Hinters now.
Kaifeck.
Okay, so they were a German family, and along with their maid, they were murdered in 1920. It was an insane true crime at the time, and it's still not solved to this day. There were footprints leading to the house, but no footprints leading away. These are just some of the weird oddities that happened before and leading up to the murder. Keys went missing, a newspaper was found, but none of them subscribed to this paper, so it just kind of showed up and no one raised any flags. The former maid quit months leading up to the murders because she thought the house was haunted. She was hearing footsteps upstairs, all kinds of oddities.
Paranormal true crime. I don't know how we could solve that.
The family was all murdered. Three out in the barn. The new maid and I think the youngest child were murdered in their rooms, or in the maid's room. It's believed that the family, the three that were outside in the barn, were lured out one by one and taken out. This is the weird part. He stayed. Whoever committed this stayed at the farm for a few days, tended to the crops, to the animals. Neighbors said they saw, like, you know, chimney smoke. So this person just stayed there for a good few days and then disappeared.
Do they know the order of who got killed?
I know, obviously, it was the three that were lured to the barn. However, I'm not sure which order it was done in.
My question is, how is there only one set of footprints leading to the house, but none leading away? But there's a barn that has multiple footsteps between it. I'm not seeing anything.
Maybe he rode a horse away.
Well, there'd be hoof prints.
There's multiple footsteps, so the singular footsteps to the house doesn't really...
The footprints leading to the house happened before the actual murder. They just went outside and saw footprints in the snow leading to the home, but none leading away.
I think this might be a crime we might have to pass on to our That Strange Friends to solve.
I do want to know if this was a cattle farm.
I'm not sure. I did not take that down in my studies.
If it was a cattle farm, the lack of footprints leaving might have something to do with that. Because he could have rode off on a horse over the hoof prints of the cattle.
How long afterwards did they search for prints?
A neighbor sent their son over to the house to try to be like, okay, what's going on?
If they sent their son, why is that one set of footprints leading to the house such a big thing? Like, I've seen that in there's an entrance but no exit, or it's an all-locked room, right? If there was a person who was sent to this house, and this person walked to this house, knocked on the door to give somebody in that house something, then there was still only one set of footprints leading to the house.
The thing is that the footprints happened before the murders. It wasn't the kid coming up to see, like, where they were. It was literally the whole family woke up one morning to find footprints going from the woods to the house. And they reported all of these incidences.
I see. So that was a reported incidence unrelated to the murder.
Yes, it was,
now
it was
I understand.
In the months leading up to said murders.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Based on the fact that you were talking about a crime in the 1920s, in 1922, 997 New Yorkers died of poisoning, and the likelihood that these were murders were extremely high. So that was just a little fact I had there, because forensic testing for poison wasn't widely practiced yet. That probably has some reasoning to do with what you were just talking about, Chris. They weren't able to assess the footprints properly or on time to figure out where this person came from or went because they didn't have the correct tools. And also when it's snowing, it's easy to cover things up.
It also very well could have been a cover up. How do 1,000 New Yorkers die of poisoning and there's no trace of who did it? Especially in New York, I know back in the day, the early 1900s, police and coroners would be bribed a lot. People would get away with things like this. Quite possibly they were both cover-ups.
What is the reasoning behind most murders? I think a lot of them are crimes of passion.
I think that's a fair assessment. Crimes of passion, crimes of anger. Because both hot and cold anger can produce murders. Hot anger from straight up just like bashing somebody's face in. Cold murder in the sense of cold, yeah. Calculated, long term.
Yeah. Meticulous.
I won't.
Meticulous, that's the word.
In 1966, Charles Whitman committed one of the most shocking crimes in American history when he opened fire from the clock tower of the University of Texas in Austin. Whitman killed 14 people before he was gunned down by police, but more than three decades later, a 15th person was added to Whitman's list of the victims. Why do you think that might be?
He missed and hit somebody he wasn't intending.
So 1966, this is like right after the height of the civil rights movement. The only thing I could think of is maybe this was a African-American who was not listed because nobody cared.
That's a really good theory, Rob.
I was thinking maybe he got injured and died later.
You were completely on point with that one. So the 15th person was added to the list of victims because he was shot in the kidney and spent the rest of his life on dialysis before succumbing to his injuries in 2001. Mm. So even though Whitman died in 1966, he was still found responsible for Gunby's murder 35 years after the fact. What do you guys think about that?
Statutes of limitations? Do they exist for a reason? And if they exist, are they applied here? If they are not applied here, why not?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's a rare thing to happen. I've never heard of that, where somebody got injured from an infamous shooting or tragedy and then almost 40 years later died and then got added to the list. I've never heard that.
Have y'all seen Criminal Minds? No, Criminal Minds. Mindhunter on Netflix.
Yeah, the first season I have.
You know, a lot of that information was based off the book. One of the segments stuck out in my head about serial killers. If I remember it correctly, and I might be paraphrasing, the character of Bill may have said this. He said that serial killers don't lack empathy. It's that they think other people lack it. That they have it, but others don't. That they don't have the same...
emotional spectrum?
No, conscious.
They're like, I'm the only person that I know exists. I'm cleansing the earth by killing these other people that I don't know if they have these feelings or not.
Well, that's a psychopath.
Yeah, in a very over...
simplified way.
Generalized? I don't know if simplified is the right word, but yeah, that's pretty much that concept, rather.
To put it in Disney terms, they have the Jiminy Cricket, nobody else does.
Right.
Wow.
They got the Jiminy Cricket. They have this all-knowing knowledge because as far as they're concerned, they're the only ones that they know is conscious because they're them and nobody else is them.
Pretty much. Pretty much. They think they're the only ones that have any kind of real feeling. And I never heard of that, but that's a very extremely interesting concept.
Because when I was younger, I was like, does anybody else exist? Because I'm me. I don't know what it's like to be anybody else. Is everybody else robots? I don't know.
I used to think when I was a kid, you know, like, am I the only one who can hear my voice inside my head? Or can everybody hear that? Right. So I'm not sure if it's just an evolved form of essentially that, where you think you're the only person who has profound thoughts or... I don't know what y'all do after we get off the mic. If you know, for all I know, y'all just sit there and wait till the next episode to record.
We just sit in the same spot like a statue. And then we...
like the tree falling and can anybody hear it?
We just respond right before the next episode.
The audio just magically is beautiful.
Exactly. Well, we've been over this. I'm not sure if you guys are all just in my head after all the weird synchronicities I've had.
This is just a dream within a dream, Cappy.
This one's called Native Son, and it says, there was nothing funny about the crimes Nixon was accused of, beating five women to death with a brick. So why did Nixon get such a lousy nickname, that being Native Son? Racism, probably. Nixon was black, and throughout his 1939 trial, He was compared to a wild animal with subnormal intelligence in court and the media. The blatant racism of the trial and the questionable validity of Nixon's confession prompted Richard Wright to write his classic novel, Native Son, about how a society of hatred and oppression inevitably produce a man capable of terrible crimes.
Nature versus nurture. Is that society's fault or is that Nixon's fault? Right.
They're saying that the name, because they always gave white serial killers these crazy, outrageous names.
But after the fact, yeah.
Because murder and psychopathy have nothing to do with race. That just happens in every race.
Psychopathy.
But what do you guys think about that, given the name Native Son and it being due to racism back then?
I haven't heard of any famous African-American serial killers. There's one. I feel like they usually just call them by their real name.
Everybody, what are your closing thoughts on everything? How do you feel about true crime now that we've had this conversation? I actually found it quite interesting.
Then I will say I have no final things to say.
Well, Chris, Chris, what about you?
We should definitely be continuing the true crime wave, because not only is it interesting, but it also shines light on things, not just things, but people being murdered. It also brings cases that have gone cold back up, because a lot of these cases need to be solved. A lot of things like victimization rates among Native American men and women are barely even reported. These are things that need to have light shown on them, because if you don't know, you can't change it.
Definitely.
I feel like there's definitely a lot of unsolved cases, and that has a lot of racial connotations. There should be a lot more focus put on solving some of these cases that go cold, because a lot of times they just give up on it because they don't want to put in the money or the resources, because they're trying to spend them on other things that can be questionable. A lot of that money could be spent towards reopening the book on some of these cases.
All right. Well, it was a pleasure having you all on for this episode. I feel like there's a lot of information here, and it's going to be really intriguing for a lot of people that are interested in the true crime genre. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, guys.
Love you,
bye.
Guys.
Bye.
You can find all of our links on our link tree. That's https://linktr.ee/thepsychedelicpodcast. There's no hyphen there, and that will be in the description along with the other sites that we got information from. Thank you all, and have a blessed non-serial killer kind of day or night.